You are listening to the Photo Bomb Podcast with the world's greatest photographers, Boo Ray and Gary.
Welcome to the Photo Bomb Podcast. My name is Boo Ray Perry, and joining me as always is Gary Hughes.
Aloha.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Happy morning to you.
Happy morning to you. I understand.
Is that a thing people say at all?
I don't know. How many different ways can you say hello to somebody? You've been saying hello to somebody. We say hello every single week. And I mean, you know, at some point it just has to be, sup, you know?
There's got to be at least one of those in there, you know. But, you know, I was talking to Julie, my wife, yesterday, and she said, have you done aloha yet? I go, you know what? I don't think I have.
So, you have to have done aloha, right? I think aloha would be like the first month.
I have no idea.
An easy, you know, you're going straight to aloha when you're trying to come up with a different way to say hello.
I love that the bit about me saying hello differently every time becomes not a good bit anymore when we talk about the bit.
Oh, it wasn't ever really a good bit.
Come on, man. People love it.
Do they?
We're going to...
Let me go back to the emails here. I've got an actual folder set aside of people who emailed in to talk about how much they love the Gary Says Hello bit. Let me just pull that up on the... Oh, that folder's not there after all.
Well, show me the folder of emails in general.
And that's true. Not like we get a lot of... We don't get a lot of contact from our listeners. We do not.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's good. We love our listener. We're really happy about that.
So you said something to me just before we went on the air, which I thought was extremely telling of your personality and mine, and that is that you're doing a new diet, which I heard about at great length at IPC this year, pretty much every waking moment that I was with you.
Thanks, buddy.
And you're doing really well. You look great. You look fabulous.
Thanks, buddy.
You said to me that you were at a new stage that just wasn't going to work for you. And would you like to repeat what you said to me?
All right, so I'm doing a no sugar diet, so no sugar and no carbs, and it's actually been pretty cool. The first week you feel like you have the flu, and that kind of sucks a lot. But then, you know, I've done about 18 pounds in about 4 weeks, and that's pretty much laying on my butt, you know, not really increasing my exercise level, which is, you know, my work is moderately vigorous. So I'm at the point now where I think I've sort of plateaued in the weight loss department. And I think that now I need to start exercising to make it go even further. And I'm thinking I'm pretty good at this way.
Yeah, that's exactly the way I am. You always tell yourself that, you know, someday I'm going to start exercising and I'm going. And is there a point in your life, there has to be an age perhaps, where you finally just say, you know, that's just never going to happen. I mean, Louis C.K. said that. Like when he was 40 or 45, he said, from here on out, it's either this or a whole lot worse. There's never going to be, because your whole life, there's always this, in the back of your head, this little dream that someday I'll join a gym maybe and I'll get in shape. I could still do that, you know. I could always still do that thing where I get the rockin' body. And then you reach a point in your life where you just realize you have to admit to yourself, yeah, I'm never going to do that. This is as good as it's going to get, right?
What if this is it?
This is it. I'm not going to get any better. This or a whole lot worse.
Because I'm not going to stop eating donuts, you know? And I'm just not going to stop binging Netflix. But I am never going to go out there in the morning and run 6 miles because I don't like to run 6 miles.
It bores me. I can't exercise because it bores me. Even if I have a TV on, I can't. It just bores me. My mind is wandering too much, and I'm just thinking about all the things I could be doing instead of running on this treadmill.
Like sitting in a chair and
all of which would be much more enjoyable than running on this treadmill.
I agree. Yeah. No, I've gone through periods in my life where I exercise a lot, like do the gym a lot. But at this point in my life, you know, if you've got small children and a business, and I'm constantly going, trying to keep my old house from falling down and all the stuff that I do all day. It's like, let me just go ahead and do one more thing where I, you know, move.
Well, yeah, I don't have enough time in the day to do the things I do want to do. You know what my Netflix list looks like of shows that I'm supposed to be watching that I'm not watching? Come on, we've got to have priorities. Yeah.
Ozark is not going to watch itself.
That's right. Or The Expanse. By the way, I have a new show for you, too.
All right.
Andrea Savage has a show on True TV, of all places, called I'm Sorry, and you can...
I've heard of this.
You can watch it on demand, And it's hilarious. She's quite hilarious.
I've heard it's very, very good.
Yes. She's quite good. So if you're not watching, I'm sorry. Because it's one of those shows that you're like, oh, it's on True TV and it's really good and no one's going to know it's here and it's going to disappear in a year. You know, and you say, like, let's get the word out. People, yeah. Go
what
check
is that
out.
With TV shows, like really good ones that just nobody gets behind?
You can't find them. There's too many shows now.
Yeah, it's oversaturation of things to watch, absolutely.
Every time I turn on the television, it's a show where people are either buying very small houses, or rich people are buying very big houses, or people are buying houses and turning them into other houses. Or how many shows do we need about homes?
I mean, don't know those Property Brothers, though, right? Like, meow.
See, I don't even know that show. That's yet another one. See, how many shows do we need about homes? It's
there's
ridiculous.
A show just about people who build tree houses.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, there's the treehouse show. Yeah, yeah.
And I find it interesting because I could understand a show about something that I might go buy next week. But who are all these people who are watching these shows about something that they're not, I'm not buying, you know. All the people watching these shows cannot be people who are thinking of buying a home.
There are three shows dedicated to people who buy abandoned storage units.
Yes. I understand that because that's a little bit of a treasure hunt kind of thing, and that's kind of fun to see what they get.
There are three of them.
Yeah.
Three shows dedicated. How many pawn shops shows are there?
And yet, we don't have a sponsor. Explain that. How is it that all of these shows manage to get sponsors and stay on the air, and we don't even have a sponsor? Of course, we've never actually tried to get a sponsor. That might have something to do with it. Yeah, that might have something to do with it as well.
Because we already do something that we enjoy for a living with our photography businesses, and we've already monetized the one thing that we love, and I don't want to know if we want to monetize this other thing that we love to do.
You know, there's something to that. There's actually some truth to that, that if we try to monetize this too much, then it becomes an obligation instead of a fun thing.
Right, and nobody gets to tell us what we can and can't say or do.
It's also, in a way, it's also the reason that you don't see me holding the $2,000 a person weekend workshop, retreat thing a lot that a lot of photographers do, because if I charge that much money, then I would have to really make sure I did a good job.
Really put some effort into it.
Really got to give you your money's worth. You know, and I can give you your money's worth at $100 a person, but at $2,000 a person, I would have a hard time believing I gave you your money's worth, and I'd be so deathly afraid that someone would not feel that I did, and then I would just feel horrible.
Yeah, you know? I don't know about workshops. I've always been hesitant to do like the old private workshop thing. You know,
yeah,
really have not been in where you charge. I mean, obviously, if you've got something to teach and you're really going to help people, it's obviously going to be worth something. But there's so many people doing it. And I have photographers in the industry who are educators who I know. And they're always like, Gary, you got to come up with something to sell. You got to come up with a product. You got to come up with a thing. You got to have a thing. And my response is always, God, there's like enough. Like, what am I going to sell? What am I going to come up with that you can't look up on YouTube? And, you know, like, And how am I going to justify that when you can join? There's like 50 different photographers right now that do like the, you pay $20 a month and you get to follow them around on a shoot every month and all that kind of, like, they seem like they're putting quite a lot of effort into what they're doing. And I just, like, I don't even want to go to the gym. I'm not going to create a whole nother business at this time in my life, you know. I'm about to have, my wife's about to have our second child. I'm going to have a two and a half year old. And a newborn here shortly, and I really just, it's just not enough of me to go around, and I'm just not that motivated.
Yeah, well, number two, especially, I'm just not that motivated, you know.
Mm. One day I will be, one day I'll be very motivated, because I find that there's like there's a group of people that I'm actually kind of inspired to try and help. There's the people that are really, really want to do photography as their job, and don't know how to do that. So the people wanting to sort of transition into living their dream of their creative, you know, profession. And so I want to help these people by telling them, stop, you have a 401k, stop, don't do it.
You have health care.
You have health care and a 401k and a pension, please. Just stay there. Stay at Target. You're fine.
Be a serious hobbyist. Do it on weekends for a select clientele at a high price that doesn't require so much work, and be happy. Be happy.
The world needs managers at Dunkin' Donuts too, Jerry. They do.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
So I found an interesting story today. My wife's sister is in the Coast Guard, and she's home on not on leave, but she's actually in Florida, even though she's stationed in Alaska. She's in Florida right now doing some training in the Tampa area, so she's coming to visit with us over the weekend.
Is she like badass? Like, you know, the Alaskan Coast Guard sister? Is it like that? She like, don't mess with that. She's badass.
You know, maybe, but she's just she's a cool person.
I watch most Dangerous Catch.
She's not like in a rescue swimmer, but she is. She flies on the cargo planes, the C-130s, and she pushes things out the back of the plane while it's flying, which is a pretty rad job.
Well, that is pretty rad.
Like, who wouldn't want to get paid to do that?
By the way, rescue swimmer is supposed to be the hardest job to get in any of the military organizations. Even harder than being a Navy SEAL is getting a job as a rescue swimmer.
Yeah, I think it's got a pretty high fail rate by the time you even get into this.
They put you in the pool, and then two guys try to drown you. And if they drown you, you don't get to be one.
That's like testing for a witch.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like, we're going to tie you to a big rock, throw you in the water, and if you live, you're a witch.
The way it works. Two guys are going to try and drown you now. And if you manage to keep your head above the surface, you go to the next phase. Which is a written test or something. Who knows? But first, survive the drowning attempt.
All right. So there's this interesting story. This is from The Telegraph, which is a British newspaper. So this is funny. A guy, a drone enthusiast, because we do talk about drones on the show as important to the photography industry, was able to land his drone on the deck of the HMS Queen Elizabeth without being detected, which is an aircraft carrier. Which is a huge, huge boat. It is a $3 billion military aircraft.
The Queen Elizabeth.
Carrier, they're called the Queen Elizabeth.
Do you know what they said when the drone landed?
No, what did they say?
Hello! Hello, Mr. Drone! Hello! And then they waved their hand.
Do you have brain
Hello!
Damage?
Hello, it's a drone. Isn't that lovely? two shows a night. Tip your waitress.
I wish our listeners could see your stupid face.
Hello.
You're like filled with rapture to be making fun.
Where's my corgi dog?
It's a
corgi, not corgi. Corgi dog. Hello. All right.
She has two of them.
The Queen Elizabeth. Anyway, she has more than two. Doesn't she have like four or five or six? They follow her everywhere.
I have no idea.
I love the Queen. I do. I really do love the Queen.
It doesn't say Queen Elizabeth II, so it actually might be named after the original Queen Elizabeth.
Oh, in that case, it's chopped the head off that sucker.
She was apparently kind of a badass. So, my wife's sister's in town, and she's talking about this story, because these things obviously are more prominently getting around in the military. And with our news this week in the country, this seems to be a small story. But let me read you an excerpt from it. But this week, the Royal Navy was left blushing after it emerged that an amateur enthusiast managed to land a $300 drone on the deck of HMS Queen Elizabeth without anyone raising the alarm. According to local media reports in Scotland, the drone user managed to fly the drone past armed patrol boats before landing on the deck of the aircraft carrier. The pilot, who is yet to be named, told reporters this week that he had been, quote, amazed how easy it had been to carry out the stunt. So, my question is, do you think somebody lost their job over this?
You know, well, first of all, it's the military. So, it's, you know, they go to the brig and they get demoted and they do that thing where they come in and they strip your stuff off your uniform in front of everybody.
They hit you in the face with an iron gauntlet. Wham!
And they click their heels together and they slap you. But it's a huge wake-up call. You know, especially when you consider the surveillance suite that an aircraft carrier travels with, and destroyers and tenders and everything else is supposed to detect anything that comes near it.
It's got a little bit more than OnStar that thing.
Just a little bit. Like a backup camera.
Hey, there's a lot of talk about missiles in North Korea this week. I'm like, okay, do you think that if they can't stop Military technology can't stop a $300 drone from landing on the deck. How likely is it that we have a missile that can shoot down another missile?
Oh, yeah. Well, the truth is, it's just too small, though. I mean, the military folks will tell you it's just too small. They've never, no radar has ever been able to detect anything that's that small. That's the problem.
But you think there's got to be like 500 guys on that boat and all the boats that, like, nobody was like, anybody hear that?
Yeah, that's the part that gets, well, you're not going to hear it. Aircraft carrier is pretty loud, so I can see not hearing it, but I would think someone would see it because there's people, you know, all over the decks and, you know, there's that guy that gets to do the cool thing when the plane launches. That's the job I want on the aircraft carrier, by the way.
Which is what?
The launch officer guy. The guy that bends down, the guy that gives a thumbs up and a salute in one quick motion to the pilot. You know, he goes, thumbs up, salute. And then he does that thing where he bends way down and points his finger down the deck and, like, go. And then, boom, they shoot it off the deck. I want to be that guy.
I don't know that you're limber enough to get that done.
No, I would not. You have to be limber. But it's a very cool thing. And he's like, you know, thumbs up, salute, go. And then, bam, they shoot it off the deck. And you're like, that was just cool as could be. And at the end of a cruise, he takes his boots off, ties the laces together, puts them on the catapult, and they shoot his boots off the deck. It's a tradition. Seriously.
Is that a tradition?
They will shoot it. They shoot I don't know if it's the launch officer or what they call him, but they shoot his boots off the deck I don't know who started it, but it's a tradition in the Navy.
Any naval officers or Air Force officers, please feel free to email the show and let us know that everything that Bull Ray.
No, I saw it. No.
Bull Ray saying is
there's a great documentary series called Carrier, and it was a documentary done on the modern aircraft carrier on PBS about, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, and they showed that happening. I tell you what else is really cool. We're off on a tangent here, but this is really cool. I didn't know until I saw this. Like, the carrier will come into Pearl at Hawaii, and then it goes from there and comes to San Diego, and San Diego is where, you know, we're done, right? But a lot of the sailors can get off at Pearl because just the trip from Pearl to San Diego, they don't need all these people because they'll fly the planes off before they make landfall. They'll fly all the planes off. So all the people who take care of the planes don't need to be on the boat anymore. So a lot of them will get off on Pearl and just fly from there or spend some time in Hawaii. But another thing they do, and this is really cool, is your family, if you're one of the people who has to stay on the boat to take it from Pearl to San Diego, your family can come on board the aircraft carrier and make that journey with you.
Really?
Yes, because the idea is they want families to come and see what you do and see what your life is like because, you know, retention rate is tough in the Navy when you go out into the ocean for 6 months and you don't see your family. So in this particular one, the guy who was that dude who had his boots shot off, he had like his 8-year-old son with him. And his 8-year-old son, you know, helped him put the boots on the thing and shoot it off so he could show his son what he did and everything. It was very nice.
So, Daddy, what's this? That's an intercontinental ballistic missile, son.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just one of the ways that the Navy is, you know, like, okay, how do you get people to sign up for this thing where you have a family at home and then we take you for 6 months out into the ocean and you don't get to see them? You know, we got to try and make it friendlier for people.
That sounds so incredibly unlike Carnival. Or yeah. Royal Caribbean.
But how cool would it have been? My father was in the Navy, and he served on aircraft carriers. And what a memory if I had that memory now. I don't, of course. They didn't do it back when I was a kid. But if they did, wow. To be able to tell your friends, oh, yeah, I sailed on an aircraft carrier with my dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know?
I mean, that's great. But kids now, do you think they'd be into it, or they'd be pissed that their iPads don't work?
Well, I think the iPads do work. They got Wi-Fi on the aircraft carrier.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure.
And drones. Apparently,
lots and lots and lots of drones. So what else is going on?
Well, hey, this is a story that I clipped a while back, and it's always been sitting in the kind of the dead letter file of let's talk about this when we have nothing else to talk about. But I thought it was interesting when I clipped it, and it has to do with the Jumpman, which is what they call the logo for Nike's Air Jordan line. You know what I'm talking about? The logo of Michael Jordan in the air? Well, there was actually a picture. It was shot for Life magazine by a guy named Jacobus Co. Rentmeester, and he was shooting pictures for Life.
What was his
name? His name is Rentmeester. He's Mr. White Christmas, Gary. He's Mr. Snow.
Like the heat miser?
Yeah. He's the rent miser. Rentmeester. First name, first part of the word is rent, and the last part is Meester, M-E-E-S-T-R. So if that's pronounced a different way, lay it on me.
Nope. Rentmeester. Nope, just enjoying you struggling with it.
Jacobus Rentmeester. And he took a picture of Michael Jordan.
Tradition. It's got it.
Tradition.
If I was a wealthy man.
And he took a picture of Michael Jordan in midair, right, in that pose, right. You know, doing the dunk. And then Nike kind of rented his images. They said, you know, we'd like to pay you $150 for temporary use of your slides from the Life shoot. We're looking for inspiration. So they took his slides from the Life shoot for $150, and they looked at them, and then they created the logo, which is not quite identical, but is very close to this picture. And then eventually, he sued him and said that that was too close to his work. And so the question is it?
Man, yeah. I wish we had our friend the intellectual property attorney.
One of the most popular icons of all time, that logo that is taken. I got to go no, because if you look at the logo and you look at the picture from the Life shoot, they are not identical. His back arm specifically is not doing the same thing. His elbow is bent, with in the logo, Jordan's arm is straight. So it's not an identical. It's not like they went into Photoshop and they did a capture and pulled out, you know, him and then just turned it all black and that's our logo. It's not like that at all. It obviously was changed. So I would say it's inspired by, and therefore I don't think he has a case. And he didn't have a case. You know, I believe it was thrown out. But I thought it was interesting that he thought he had a case.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the images now. All you got to do is Google Jamiroquai Heat Miser, and he comes up right there. and the image is, it looks like he's in the, it's Jordan in the Team USA uniform.
Yeah, in the Team USA uniform. Team.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely not, you know, it's. Like, how far back do you go? Can Michael Jordan go be mad that they like took his thing and now, like, obviously not, because he probably gets $5 for every pair of Air Jordans sold in America.
Sure.
We were in LA and I saw like a line around the street from this shop that I couldn't figure out what it was, and I asked our friend, I said, "What is that?" She goes, "Oh, some new Air Jordan came out today." Like, they're still the most popular tennis shoe in the world.
Right. So we both agree, no.
Yeah.
No,
well, there's actually
you don't
a side-by-side here from the Trademark Watch website, and it's a silhouette comparison of Jamiroquai Ratatouille's photo next to the final logo, and it's definitely inspired by. But I mean, it's first of all, it's a silhouette. Second of all, it's stitched out of thread on the side of a shoe, and it's not a photograph. I know it's pretty close, but I mean, it's you know, I would say no.
Okay, so here's the next step then. Now let's talk about Richard Prince. You know Richard Prince?
That guy. Oh, my God. You know what? I wish that instead of Conor McGregor fighting Floyd Mayweather coming up, I wish it was Richard Prince fighting Conor McGregor, because I'd love to see Richard Prince get the crap kicked out of
him. Here's the thing about Richard Prince that people don't realize. Prince has been doing this since the 70s. He did this first in 1975, where he took an advertisement for Marlboro cigarettes, and there was a cowboy on a horse. Of course there was. It was Marlboro cigarettes. There was a cowboy on a horse. He took a picture of the half of the ad that didn't have the Marlboro logo and just had the cowboy on the horse. And then he posted that as art and eventually sold that piece for $1 million at auction, the highest price paid at the time for what they call a re-photograph. And now, of course, isn't he the same guy that took people's Instagram pictures and did a whole gallery show on them?
Yeah, oh yeah, he's done it several times. He keeps coming up in the news and getting sued, and he just keeps being able to do it because he just basically what he does is derivative work. So he takes their Instagram post and he'll like leave a comment on it, and then he's adjusted it enough to where now it's his piece of art. And he prints them big. He prints them like 40 by 60 and does whole gallery exhibitions of like other people's Instagram photos. I mean, I think somebody should probably give this guy a visit in a parking lot with a tire iron. He just makes me mad.
I just don't understand how it's not. That is direct copyright infringement.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand that art is derivative, but you took a picture of my picture and then you sold it. I don't know how you would measure it, but I understand if you take a picture of a picture and then you. you take that and you stick it in your painting somewhere, and you doodle it all up or something, make it completely different or weird. Well, then I can understand that that's a little more derivative. Like, let's say the cover of Sgt. Pepper's album, where, you know, those were a bunch of photographs that were cut out or something like that. I could see where you could make a case then that I'm creating a new form of art from your picture. But in this case, he just takes a picture and he doesn't do anything to it. It's your picture, strain is plain and simple, you know?
Well, apparently he started this in 2014.
With the Instagram thing, too. Started in 1975 was when he started copying other photographers' work.
Well, as of the end of July, I just found this news story on the most recent lawsuit, and it says, Richard Prince, who has pushed the legal limits of artistic appropriation for decades, will continue to fight for his art in court. This week, a federal judge in New York refused to throw out a photographer's lawsuit against Mr. Prince over Mr. Prince's use of an image in an exhibition. The case will continue and should set a precedent for how the fair use doctrine relates to Instagram, the photo sharing app. In 2014, Mr. Prince presented an installation called, quote, New Portraits at the Gagosian Gallery. Isn't that having something to do with Ghostbusters? Gagosian, the traveler.
Many slurns were roasted that day, I can tell you.
In which he printed various Instagram photos on large canvases and added his own Instagram-style comments below them. The show led to a backlash, including from the photographer Donald Graham, whose photo, Rastafarian smoking a joint, was featured via a print from another user's Instagram account. Mr. Graham first filed a cease and desist order against Mr. Prince and then a lawsuit in 2015. So hopefully, this will go our way. I mean, but do you think? What do you think about it? Really, I mean,
here's what I think about it. The difference between art and plagiarism can be a fine line, you know, and I guess it's a subjective thing. But I have a problem with too many artists who think that the definition of art is what I think is art, and that's all that matters. If I say it's art, it's art. So I see these pictures and I think to myself, if these pictures had comments on them and I put them in a gallery, that would be art. And therefore, it's completely protected. No. An artist is someone who creates something, and simply reproducing something is not creating. Right. You have to be putting something into it that is unique and new and comes from your imagination.
In that case, the guy at FedEx Kinko's could take credit for the flyers that I had them make.
Exactly. I understand he wrote something under them or whatever, but in this case, they were pictures primarily that he was showing, and he did nothing to them. That's copyright infringement, dude. Those pictures aren't yours. You didn't create those pictures. You know me. I'd like to see you create everything in it, period. I think the world would be just fine if we didn't have any art at all that was reproducing other people's work. I know there's been some great stuff out there. Andy Warhol did stuff like that. I get that there's been some great collage work out there. I get it. But if all of that was gone, I still think we'd be okay with, you know, Da Vinci and Rembrandt and Vermeer and the rest of them. And
That'd be all right. We could live with that, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's a fun form of art, but I don't think it's so crucial to our development as a culture that we need to protect it at all costs so that you can take my picture and hang it in a gallery and make $1 million off of it.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing that really burns my biscuits on this one. Why I think the guy is such a scumbag. Nobody would really care about Richard Prince if he wasn't figuring out how to get people to pay buttloads of money for these images.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, he is somehow, because he's who he is able to do this and then sell them for tens of thousands of dollars a piece. You know, and if he was just a guy on the curb in Times Square selling prints for $10, nobody would care.
Let me tell you,
copyright infringement.
Yeah, the guy working in the middle of downtown Las Vegas with the 27 different cans of spray paint and the paper plates where he's making the spray paint wolf howling at the moon prints right there, that guy's got 100 times more talent than Richard Prince does.
Yeah, that guy's Richard Prince is a scumbag. And yeah. I really hope somebody takes away all the monies. I hope, and in fact, I hope that they leverage damages against him so big that he has to declare bankruptcy. That would be great.
It's okay that you think this is art and this is art. That's great, but you don't get to sell it and make a profit from it.
Yeah, what a jerk.
Yeah,
I don't think I've never talked to a photographer that was like, You know, I think he's doing good things. He's really pushing the industry forward. He's really making a big difference for us out there. He's just pushing the boundaries of what's acceptable, and he should be. No, everybody's like, yeah, let's take him out back and beat the crap out of him because that guy sucks. It's like we spend our whole dang lives professionally, you know, to sometimes make, you know, less in a year than he makes just reprinting one person's Instagram photo.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. I mean, is there a side to this that I'm missing where we should all be sticking up for him or something? I don't know.
Well, you know, only if you're going to stick up for him the way that, you know, I stick up for free speech, even if it's free speech I don't agree with. You know, so, you know, I guess there's a few people who would like, well, you've got to stick up for him because if he can't do that, then the next thing you know, they're going to tell me I can't paint without giving money to the people who made the paint. Or something. I don't know. I mean, that's the only way you could possibly defend what he does is if you're afraid, you know, like the NRA, that every small thing that you do to us is just leading to a bigger thing eventually that's over the line. So, yeah, that's the only way I can think to defend him because he's just clearly making money off other people's work.
Do you want to hear something that's going to make you really just seal the deal on what a scumbag this guy is?
Oh, like I haven't heard enough.
Okay. So, the lawsuit will serve as a follow-up case to a case brought against Mr. Prince by Patrick Carew, whose photos of Rastafarians were used by Mr. Prince in collages and paintings. The U.S. Court of Appeals decided largely in favor of Mr. Prince, but left an ambiguous precedent for determining fair use. Four other lawsuits have been filed by other photographers whose work was used in the New Portraits exhibit. Mr. Prince responded on Twitter by saying, quote, "Phony fraud photographers keep mooching me. Why? I changed the game."
Oh, wow. What a douche.
Yeah. What a douche.
I mean, this reminds me of is the case with Blurred Lines, the song Blurred Lines.
Yeah, I know.
The estate of Marvin Gaye sued Blurred Lines.
Robin Thicke and Pharrell Williams or something.
Sued them saying that basically that song, that the backing track was a Marvin Gaye song.
Right.
Which song is it? Got to Give It Up.
Yeah. Right. Yep. I've heard it's pretty convincing. I mean,
well, if you listen, I mean, the first time I heard Blurred Lines, I'm like, oh, that's Got to Give It Up. That's clearly it's Got to Give It Up. So I was very much in favor of them losing the lawsuit, and they did lose the lawsuit. But then when I heard the opposing argument, it became, okay, you've got a point too, because when they go back and they really look at it and you realize that all music is derivative, then that, you know, maybe, so that's a little too derivative is what you're saying, because you can track any popular song, you can track its roots back to older songs. You know, there's nothing new under the sun.
Well, this argument has been going on forever. I remember when I was young, there was a big court case over Ice Ice Baby versus Under Pressure by Queen.
That's right. And to the point where Rolling Stone listed Queen as a co-writer when they put it on their charts because it was right. So clear. And I believe he lost that lawsuit as
well.
There
was
but
a
recently,
one-note difference.
Recently, there was a big lawsuit against Led Zeppelin for a bunch of their songs that the band that opened for them on their first tour was like, those are mostly our songs, and they ripped them off. And there's a great thing on YouTube called Everything's a Mashup that actually will show you step by step how almost every Led Zeppelin song is actually a mashup of other bands' songs that they worked with or played music with. And the argument was made, yeah, but if we don't let people do this, we won't have Stairway to Heaven. And yeah. And so it's worth it to have Stairway to Heaven to mean that some people don't get credit for the fact that the bridge is actually taken from some song of another band.
Yeah, I don't understand, you know, how all of it works, and there are probably lots of people with law degrees that get to decide all this stuff, but, I mean, I think that it comes down to intent, and you can't really litigate intent. You know, not really, not in a civil case. Like, you can't say whether or not what somebody's intention was, unless you've got Robert Plant on record, on a recording on your whatever t- tape you have that says, oh yeah, so we love that song, and since they weren't successful and we decided that we were going to take, you know, that and put that in our song. It just made our song work. And then you go, oh, he straight up jacked that song.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, you don't even know what's going on in people's heads. However, it did tarnish Led Zeppelin for me a little bit.
It did for me too. And I tell you what untarnished me was when I finally read the full story of My Sweet Lord versus One Fine Day. George Harrison wrote the song My Sweet Lord.
Which I love that song.
And it was taken to court because My Sweet Lord, Hare Krishna, you know, One Fine Day. It was taken from, you know, One Fine Day. And when you read the story behind that, it is just bull. Because he did it, when it went to court, it was ruled that he did it subconsciously, that he didn't do it on purpose. But when you look at the record, he comes out with the song and then, like, it's brought to his attention. It sounds like One Fine Day. And he was like, oh my gosh, it does. So he goes to his manager and he says, contact whoever owns the rights to One Fine Day and tell them I would like to buy them. I want to buy the rights to the song. He recognized that it sounded like One Fine Day. And so he was like, I want to buy the rights to their song. If they want to sell them, I'll buy the rights to their song. Therefore, you know, paying them in effect for the fact that I'm using that it sounds like their song. And his manager instead went to them and said, hey, you can sue him and get a lot more money. So let me help you sue him and I'll take a piece of that. And that's how it ended up in court.
Dirtbag.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, sure, I guess he could have said, I'll just give him a cut right off the bat or whatever. But at least he tried. At least when he realized, you know, oh my gosh, it does sound like One Fine Day. Well, I'm rich and these people are not rich and they've got rights to a song they aren't making money off of anymore anyway. So, you know, well, I just dropped something. So, you know, I'll go and at least I'll offer to buy the rights and that'll be fine. Will Smith did the same thing with Men in Black. The woman who wrote Forget Me Nots, which is a song that is the backing track for Men in Black, she was approached and they said, we'd like to buy the right. We'd like to, what was it? They said, we want to offer you $50,000 for the use of your song. We're using a snippet of it. And she was like, really? Yeah. And she said, let me hear the song. And then they played Men in Black for her, and she was like, a snippet? It's my entire song. Forget Me Nots is the entire backing track. She's like, no, I'll take co-author. So I'll take co-author. That's what I'll take. And she did, and she made millions as a result, because yeah, it was a huge hit.
So I thought you were going to say Will Smith, after writing The Men in Black, had to sue himself for plagiarizing Getting Jiggy With It.
No. Men in Black is Forget Me Nots. He does it all the time, though. Wild Wild West is a mashup of two songs. A mashup of I Wish by Stevie Wonder and Wild Wild West by Escape Club. Those two songs put together. My children, by the way, love me because we'll be in the car and I'll decide to play the two songs back to back. And look, can you hear how these songs are the same? And they're like, can I just please look at my phone?
Wow, Dad, that's really interesting. Please shut up.
Please, can I look at my phone? You know, and I try to do it with songs that are popular, like, you know, the Marvin Gaye thing. And I'm like, now I'm going to play this old Marvin Gaye song. Now hear this and hear how it sounds the same. Yeah, Dad, can you drop me off at dance, please?
Yeah, that's the double-edged sword of having children, isn't it? It's like, I've got so much wisdom for you, yes, but you hate me.
They just don't care about the wisdom.
No,
you know?
Not at all.
And you
no,
hope that some of it out. Sticks. Because some of my dad's wisdom sticks. Some of the stuff my dad would put on me when I was a kid that I didn't really care about, now I know about. You know, I know who Jimmy Rogers was, the singing break man, and his contribution to country music. Even though I'm not a huge country fan, I understand more about country music than anyone who isn't a country fan because of my father educating me on country music and Merle Haggard and Lefty Frizzell. You know, and so I'm glad that I have that information. So some of it sticks with you, but I think sometimes I maybe give my kids too much. You know?
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. They're like, every time we get in the car, does it have to be a lesson?
Yeah. Everything's a teaching moment. Let's everybody calm down. Can we just ride quietly and play Minecraft on my iPad?
For me, everything is a teaching moment. Yeah.
Well, you know, I think it's really, really exciting. You know, you think about that when you have children, that it's, you have somebody who is essentially your prisoner, and they have to listen to you.
It's awesome.
I finally have someone who can't get away from me.
They have
who has
to
listen
to
me.
They have to listen to my you know, George, you know, ripped off My Sweet Lord story, and you're just going to sit there and listen to it.
If you want your cell phone to continue to function, You're going to go ahead and sit here and listen while Daddy tells you about the Civil War.
That's right. That's absolutely. Oh, my God. You have no idea how many times I've done that. No idea how many times I've done that. Let's talk about the mistakes made at Gettysburg. Yeah.
Yes. Interestingly enough, do you know that in World War II, with Hitler, how he lost the war? You know, oh, my God, Dad. I'm looking forward to it. My daughter's only 2.5, so... everything I say is magic at this point.
Well, a friend of mine was watching a streaming gamer play a game online, and somebody commented that he looks like Al Pacino in The Godfather, and the guy said, I've never seen The Godfather, and I don't know who that is. And my friend lost his mind. How do you not know who Al Pacino is? How have you not seen The Godfather? Because really, if you go turn on the TV right now, it's playing somewhere on some channel.
You haven't seen The Godfather? What are you doing for the next 4 hours?
Yeah, exactly. 6 hours if you want to include Godfather 3.
You got to watch the director's cut. Yeah, clearly. Yeah. Okay, seriously, I want you to clear your schedule.
Clear your schedule. You haven't seen The Godfather? Come on. Yeah. No, leave the gun. Take the cannoli.
I even liked 3. I'll take it, you know.
Well, it did spawn an iconic phrase that has been used over and over and over again. Every time I try to get out, they pull me back in. That's
which
right.
Was actually made even more popular by The Sopranos. Because I think more people watch The Sopranos than Godfather 3. The guy on the show always used to do that impression and make everybody laugh. Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
That's right. That's right. All right. We have to wrap this thing up. What do we have coming up? Yes, I know. We have a lot coming. I have tomorrow, because this drops on Monday, which is tomorrow. And then the next day, Tuesday, I will be at Professional Photographers Guild of the Palm Beaches. That's ppgpb.com.
That's a lot of pee-pees.
Yeah, there's a lot of peas in there. And the very next day, I will be at Professional Photographers Guild of Florida. So if you're anywhere near South Florida and listen to our podcast, come see me. PPGPB for Tuesday, PPGF.com for Wednesday. And then coming up September 9th, and this is the big thing we've got to look forward
to. The big one. We need to talk about this.
Is Focus. Are you in Focus? Areyouinfocus.com is where you need to go. This is, in my opinion, the best convention we've ever had since I've been a member.
Really?
Yes. I think the lineup is super strong.
Yeah, I agree. The speakers are fantastic. I'm excited. I never go to classes, but I think I actually might now.
Lindsay, I know that's me. That's exactly me. Lindsay Adler is Lindsay Adler. We don't have to talk about Lindsay Adler. Everybody knows Lindsay Adler. Pete Rizak, I'm really looking forward to Pete Rizak's show presentation on how he takes character portraits of kids in old baseball gear and stuff and muddies them up, and they're just fantastic character
portraits.
Yeah,
like these vintage sports photos.
These vintage sports photos. I love it. I love the idea of it, and I wish I had thought of it. And he does it with a camera. The same camera that Matthew Brady used to photograph the Civil War is the one he uses, I mean, the actual camera. And a different thing. And,
he had to dig up Matthew Brady and wrestle it from his skeleton.
And I'm really interested to see how he markets it and how he sells it and how he came up with the idea and the rest of it. And then who's the speaker that we have that's done war correspondence work? Don't we have
Yeah, we got a ton. I'm just looking up the speaker lineup right now on the website, and it is absolutely incredible. We have Stacy Pearsall, who is sponsored by Nikon, and she's a War and Humanity kind of is the name of her program. She's a war correspondent photographer. Yeah, there's going to be some ugly crying, and there's going to be some really. I mean, we have Lindsay Adler, we have Andrew Funderburg, we have Ted Linksack, Jared Platt, who's like an Adobe expert. You know, Pete Rizak, Stacy Pearsall. It's going to be a pretty phenomenal event, and not to mention, we have the Photobomb Live.
Yes, tagged on in there somewhere, late at night on the first day when everybody's
out in the lobby,
drunk, out in the lobby at a couple of folding tables, will be the Photobomb Podcast.
Which we'll have the cosplay convention at the same time again this year. Do you remember that last year? There's like the cosplayers, all hanging around with a bunch of cosplayers, going like, "Who the heck are these guys?"
Yeah. So yeah, we're gonna have that too. So So here's what I want to do right now is. What are the odds that Lindsay Adler will be in the room when we do the podcast and we can get
zero,
on there?
0%.
That's 0%. 0%.
Look, Lindsay, I know Lindsay, and she is a really lovely person, hard worker, industry leader, and about the nicest person you'll ever meet.
Sure, I know her.
But she is at conventions so often that when she's done, she talks to everybody who wants to talk to her after a program. She'll do a spot in the Canon booth and do all that stuff, and she's very generous with her time. But she walks off the floor, she's like, I'm going to my hotel room to work.
Right.
Because she works. So she's, I don't know how much she'll be hanging around to watch our goofy show, because here's what happens. If you have like all of our speakers hanging around while we're doing our thing, nobody's going to care about us.
So, like, yeah, but we need guests for the show.
Oh, I have a guest. Remember last year, I'm hoping that he'll show up again. Fat guy in the Deadpool costume. I think he'd be a great, great guest on the show. He'd be really great.
Let's counter the Lindsay Adler model.
With Fat Deadpool.
With the Boo Ray and Gary model, where we go to speak at a state convention somewhere, and then when we're done, we're like hanging around. Doesn't anybody want to hang out with us?
No. No. I find that incredibly amusing every time. It's like nobody wants to hang out.
Yeah. Am I supposed to just go hang out in my room now for the rest of the night? Come on.
Go plug back into my charging station.
Doesn't somebody want to take me to karaoke or something? Come on. And they're all busy and they've got lives and I'm just standing there in the lobby. I'm Boo Ray Perry. Don't you want to hang out with me?
Or they all go get in a car and leave you behind.
And they leave and nobody thinks, hey, what about that guy that we brought in from halfway across the United States to speak to us? Maybe we should invite him along.
Hashtag childhood flashbacks being left behind.
My favorite is when no one tells you where the hospitality suite is. That's what I like. Yeah.
And then you're like a desperate dork walking around looking for a party. Like, hey,
and the next day you're like, oh, we were all up in Ben's room drinking. There was live strippers and karaoke. And
we were giving out $100 bills.
Yeah, and you're like, well, how come no one told me? Nobody told you about
that? I had a Mick Ultra and a half at the hotel bar. And then I went
by
to bed
myself.
Early. Tucked myself in with my little jammies.
Yeah, with an encyclopedia salesman from Topeka.
In your bed with you. That's great.
In the hotel bar.
Yes, I met a really, really interesting HVAC system salesman, and it was a really good time.
Yeah. It's such an enlightening trip for me. All right, is there anything you need to add before we wrap this up?
I just signed my contract to speak at the PhotoPro Expo. Which is in, it's in Kentucky, but it's basically Cincinnati. So it's like right across the Ohio River. So it's the little town that's across there. So it's Cincinnati, we call it. But this is a great, great expo and show. And I will be doing a keynote presentation. And then also the following day, I will be doing a four-hour workshop. It's all like lighting, shooting, posing, all that cool stuff. And that's coming up. So that's going to be, if you go to the Google machine and type in PhotoPro Expo, and that's going to be in February. Let's see. Looking at it now. There it is. It's January 26th through the 30th, maybe? I'm not really sure. Nope, that was this past year. So it's February, I think. And then in January, I will be going to London, be speaking for the SWPP convention and judging, and that'll be really cool. So I'm looking forward to being in England in January for some reason. But it's going to be a lot of fun. Really looking forward to meeting. Hopefully a couple of our UK listeners will show up, and that'll be really neat. And other than that, about to go back to my house right now and prepare for a party. We're having like 80 people over.
Wow. 80 people?
Well, that's yes, but right now...
75 of Julie's friends and 5 of yours.
That would be generous. We did the head count last night of just children. We have a bounce house, and slide. Like, it's going to be a thing.
Sunday afternoon with a bounce house in your yard. That's what dreams are made of, Gary.
Well, it's 112 degrees, so not my dreams. My dreams are much colder. Just children will be between 25 and 30, just children.
Wow. That's going to be a blast. What's the celebration?
I don't think we bought enough juice boxes.
No.
Okay, so this is we did this last time when we were pregnant with Ellie, and this is the old gender reveal party, you know, these things that people do. Oh. And so Julie decided, she said, I want to do another one. I said, okay, we'll do it. And so we made up an event, and the last time I think we probably about 35, 40 people came to the house, and we had fun, and it was a thing, and everybody cried, and it was really cool. But this time, it's like the invitations got out of hand. It's like one of those 80s movies where people find out that the dorky kid's parents are gone for the weekend.
Right.
And then 400 people show up at their house with kegs to throw a party. I think that happened in Weird Science. I'm pretty sure that was Weird Science.
But. I'm looking around at my desk. I don't see. I must have misplaced my invitation. I don't see it anywhere on the desk.
You were totally invited to the Facebook group. You know you were.
No, this is the first I've heard of it.
Well, the party's not for several hours. You can get in your car and come on.
Too late now, Gary Hughes. This is just like when I was speaking at the state convention in Minnesota and nobody told me where the party was.
Boo Ray, you're a beautiful, beautiful princess.
It's too much now. It's too late now.
I'm going to go into the Facebook event right now for this party, and I guarantee you that you've been invited and you just ignored the invite.
No, I never saw it. Never saw the invite, Gary.
Uh-huh. Look right now and see if I was invited. You are running dangerously close to being eviscerated on Facebook by me with your lies.
Like that would be the first time.
All right, so get in your car. I'll see you in a couple
hours. Okay, so we'll know then for the next podcast, we will know if it's a boy or a girl.
That's right. I'm also going to be doing a live stream on Facebook later, but that'll be, the podcast won't come out until after that. But that'll be on my Facebook
I got to tell you, kind of for your sake, I hope it's a boy, but for my sake, I hope it's a girl.
Why is that?
Well, because I have two girls, and I would like for you to have two girls, and then there would be a very, that we would be, you know, you would constantly, because I have a, we have a friend who has two girls who are older than our two girls, and so I was always, okay, you know, what's this? What's happening now? And they were always, well, we can tell you exactly, they knew everything about having two girls, and I liked that. And so I would like it if you had two girls, because then you would have my world, and I would really be able to relate to it. You know, and I'm going to be a little jealous if it's a boy, because then you're going to be like, we're buying Star Wars toys this year. And I'm like, oh, damn, I was buying Barbie.
You know what, though? My daughter is slowly getting into the Star Wars thing because it's a little scary for her as she sees Kylo Ren come out of the shuttle to start killing people with lightsabers. She's a little young for that. Yeah. However, so my good friend Kevin, Kevin Landers Media, who does a lot of video work for me, he's a really great guy. He's got twin four-year-olds. And so he comes into the studio and works from time to time and tells me, you know, last night one of my girls had a monster under her bed and daddy got to go upstairs and kill the monster. And then, you know, and I'm like, that's really cool. It's like, my daughter had a monster in her closet. And I said, Ellie, go get your lightsaber. And she goes and she gets her bubble wand that looks exactly like a big purple lightsaber. She opens the closet door and just lays waste to the inside of it. I go, did you kill it? She goes, yeah. I'm like, that's daddy's girl right there. Not only does she kill her own monsters, but she does it with a mother effing lightsaber.
There you go. All right. Yeah.
That's a parenting win.
That's a parenting win for you. Also, you don't have to get off the couch.
That's right. Say, baby, get your lightsaber and get daddy a beer.
All right. Anything else before we wrap this up?
That's it, bub.
Okay. Don't forget you can find us online, facebook.com/photobombpodcast. You can find us at photobombpodcast.com, which is our website. You can send us questions@photobombpodcast.com. You can find Gary at HughesFioretti.com. You can find me at BooRayPerry.com. And we will see you back here again next week.
See you later.